And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Hello, everyone, and if you're in the United States, I'm saying top of the morning and happy Thanksgiving to everyone. This is Martin Willis, the host of Podcast UFO, and the reason I'm saying top of the morning is because our show was not live last night. We had a major snowstorm here in Maine all yesterday and last night, and my power went out just before the broadcast. I tried to hook up my generator, but the modem wouldn't work. So this is a pre-recorded show, and our guest, Lee Spiegel, was gracious enough to agree to record with me on this holiday to get a show out to you this week, albeit late. We have a lot of fun things to talk about with Lee today, including a strange Rolling Stones interview he just did about aliens and UFOs. I had pre-recorded the news with Alejandro Rojas, so that'll be coming up in just a few minutes. And we usually come at you live every week on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. A little housekeeping here. You can always listen to the whole show for free on the Dark Matter Radio Network. That is when my power doesn't go out. And starting next week, the second hour of the podcast will be hosted on a program that will launch on December 1st. Subscribers will be able to download and listen to the second half of the shows on all kinds of platforms, including iTunes and more. And if you've not been able to subscribe with PayPal, this same platform will also be able to accept a vast variety of payment options. We'll give you all the details about this in next week's show. Ever since I added an hour to the show, making the second hour of the podcast paid subscription only, people have been upset that I'm cutting the interview in half for the non-paying listeners, and I totally get this. And though I can't possibly make everyone happy, I had two choices. One, get a second guest, and just getting one guest is a lot of work and a lot of trouble sometimes. Or two, make the monthly subscription so small that it will be affordable to anyone who wants it. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm lowering the monthly subscription to just 99 cents a month. And you'll have an option to pay more, but 99 cents a month will sure get you in. And as a side note, if you are a subscriber at 99 cents or more a month and you listen to YouTube only, please let me know. I may be able to do something with that in the future. You know, I've been getting a lot of feedback, and some of it good, people trying to help me out. And as a matter of fact, when I dropped the rate down to 99 cents, one of the subscribers that were on at $5 canceled his subscription, and he re-signed for double that amount. Thank you, Gary. Again, there's been a lot of great support, and it's really appreciated. A lot of people upset, too. So hopefully this will work out. Everyone will be happy, or close to everyone will be happy. And that's it for now. And we're coming back with Alejandro with the news right after this quick little music clip. What's going on, Alejandro?
Hello. UFOs are going on, buddy, and just in time for Turkey Day. Whether there is a correlation between UFO sightings and turkeys during this part of the holiday season, that has not been confirmed. Just to clear that out.
Yeah, I think I've heard something about that. Turkey Day sightings. Hey, I got to tell you quickly before we get rolling here. So I'm having an alien problem. Well, it's not really. They're alien to where they are, and it kind of reminds me of Chevy Chase in Christmas Vacation. But you know, my house where I live, right next door to me, was a convention center. I'm going to turn it into something else. I'm not really sure what I'm doing with it, but I sealed the squirrels out. They were in there last winter, and I got them all out this spring, and they sealed the whole place up. Well, they're in there again. I went into a room the other day, and one was running around in the room, climbs up the curtain. I'm trying to get a door open. I'm going everywhere. The doors are all frozen shut. I'm trying to get them open. The squirrel's up on the curtain rod. It jumps, bounces off my chest. I scream like an idiot, jump in the other room. Nope. And, but anyway, I think I got him out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because I let him out.
Wow.
They come back in. So it's a gray squirrel alien
gray
problem.
Gray even. Oh, yeah. My gosh. It was probably sent by the aliens. That is not normal behavior. So that's a bit of an anomaly. And we all know Giorgio has taught us that all anomalies are alien related.
That's right. And if you look at their eyes, yes, they do.
I love squirrels. They're cute little buggers. But, yeah, that would be a bit unnerving. And I don't know that I want to live with them.
Yeah, they are. They take over fast, let me tell you.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, yeah. I hope you solve that alien problem. I don't know a specialist in this sort of alien problem. If he had been extraterrestrial, I would have been able to refer you to someone.
Yeah, well, I am looking to abduct them and set them free somewhere else. I have a heart trap. That's hard to say.
Yeah,
I have a heart trap. Yeah, so so what's going on with the news this week?
So what's going on? Bassett goes to Washington again.
Steve.
So we've written, ever since I've been in this field, I write this story over and over and over and over and over again. Each time, Bassett feels disclosure's right around the corner. Sometimes he puts a date and says it's within a month, it's within a week, and unfortunately, none of that has ever happened. Of course, the most exciting Bassett goes to Washington story was a year ago,
right,
or so, and that was for the citizens' hearing, which, of course, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, where he took lots of very credible people to speak with some former members of Congress about UFOs in a mock kind of congressional hearing. Well, this is phase two of that. And phase two entails him. He made a 10-disc DVD set of the entire video testimony, and he sent that to 538 members of Congress. And now he is asking people to kind of go on social media and to ping via Twitter or Facebook all of these members of Congress and say, hey, check out those videos. He is hoping this will then create congressional hearings, which he says then will topple the truth embargo. So we'll see what happens there. He was hoping, he said, to get a lot of media attention for his campaign here. But thus far, he's gotten a story in the Washington Times, not the Post, but a different paper. And it's a kind of a short blurb. They don't say a whole lot, but not a lot of media otherwise. He sent everything out on November 5th, so we'll see what happens. I mean, I think I don't know that even an aide is going to sit through, hours and hours of video. So maybe something more concise would have been good, like an executive briefing kind of thing to give them. But he's done that in the past. So we'll see if it goes anywhere.
Yeah. Steve was the first guest on this show. So, I'm always going to be nice to him. He helped me out because it's hard when you're starting a show and to get the very first guest on. Mm-hmm. And he takes this stuff darn serious.
Oh yeah.
And he gets angry about it,
yeah.
he's passionate about it, so mm-hmm. You gotta love anyone passionate about anything, I think, don't you? Sort of.
Sometimes, certainly, we've ran into those people who take their passion a little to the extremes. Mm-hmm. And that can be bad.
So what else is happening?
'Tis the season for crowdfunding. There are three crowdfunding projects that we wrote about in the past week regarding UFOs, or at least kind of space-related, all of which are pretty exciting. And so, however, I don't know that this is a time that people are taking out their checkbook to crowdfund. Really, they're taking out their checkbook to buy sweaters and ties and various other gifts for people, mostly of which are not appreciated by the receiver. So the first campaign is one that I've written about, and I'm going to bash Huffington Post, which Lee Spiegel's a part of. He's actually been helping. I've written a bunch of blogs lately for the Huffington Post, one on Travis Walton recently, but they actually denied one of my blogs, and this is about this space warp project, because I've interviewed, I think you might have to, this gentleman named David Paris, who's an adjunct professor, out of University of Nebraska and other schools out there. Him, along with some grad students and some engineers, have put together what they believe is a space warp technology. Now they are having an Indiegogo campaign to crowdfund this technology in order to build a working model, a drone that will fly around. I think this is extremely exciting. And so I wrote about it on our site, but I posted a blog for Huffington Post, and for some reason they denied me, which is so frustrating for me, because I was hoping to get their project in a bigger venue, get more eyes on it, because I think they deserve a shot. You know, they're not asking for a whole lot of money, but I would love to see them possibly build something to ferret this out, to discover whether this technology that they've believe they've been able to demonstrate works or not.
Yeah, that is surprising.
Yeah, so, you know, give Lee some stuff for me. Give him a hard time.
I will. I'll try. Yeah.
Although, admittedly, he is helping me, and hopefully he will get that posted. But their Kickstarter campaign is not, or I'm sorry, it's Indiegogo, is not lasting very much longer. It's only going for a few more days. So I urge people to go up there and to give them some money. I think this is a really cool project. And the second, of course, is the MUFON website, which we talked about last week. So they've still got that rolling, about a week left. They've actually gotten now close to $20,000. I guess people have mailed in. They've got close to $30,000 if you include those. But through the Kickstarter, they've got about something like $15,000 now. So they've got a week to go to make their $78,000. However, the third is one that I'm really excited about as well, which is Robert Hastings is doing a documentary. Of course, he's spoken with over 115 witnesses, to military witnesses, to people who say they've worked at nuclear facilities and they have seen UFOs, and or those UFOs have reacted with the nuclear weapons. So I think he's got some incredible information and research. Some people have argued, well, we've seen this on TV. But Robert Hastings doesn't do TV. He's frustrated with TV producers because he says they just take your research and they screw it up. And I agree with him, because usually they do add dubious material. It's very frustrating that the producers aren't more careful with your research. So he's usually denies when he gets requests to work with TV production companies. So to see his pure data and research, which is amazing, he's trying to work on a documentary. He said he was given $100,000. He's gone through that. He just needs $25,000 more to finish this up. So he's asking people for donations. So hopefully people will do that, because you can even watch a five-minute clip there, and it's chock full of these amazing sightings and cases as told by these military witnesses. So everybody's vying for your money. Maybe give a little bit to each. I don't know what to advise you there, but you know, chip in $5 or something, people.
Right.
Okay, yeah, the last story is just kind of related to the UFO nukes. It's just in Alabama recently, there was a sighting over a nuclear power plant. So that's just kind of interesting, just to show that these sightings over nuclear sites still happen. And that is the news from OpenMinds.tv.
Thanks so much, and you can find links to this right in our show notes. That'll go right to the stories. Thanks so much, Alejandro, and
my
we'll be
pleasure.
Talking to you next week.
All right, talk to you soon.
Have a great
Turkey Day.
Same to you. Good Thanksgiving. All right, we're coming right back with Lee Spiegel from the Huffington Post and music by Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse. Hang in for right after the clip. Lee, hey, thanks for joining us on this special American holiday, Thanksgiving. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, and a happy Turkey Day to you, too.
Thank you. And, yeah, what a nightmare last night was. And I'm sorry we didn't get to record. You and I were talking every few minutes, and it just wasn't happening.
I know, and I felt badly also for... I had actually mentioned to a few friends of mine that they might want to catch the show live, and I told them how to find it on the internet, and they probably didn't hear us.
Yeah, I guess so. Not. Now, they're hearing reruns and kept waiting for you.
Yeah.
Hey, so last time you were on, we ended the show, and you said that you were going to talk next time on how you brought UFOs to the United Nations. And I know that was a long time ago, and that's really interesting. Let's hear about that.
Well, you know, it was a long time ago. It seems like a lifetime ago. And it's probably the thing that I'm most proud of in my career working and researching UFOs. A lot of people still consider it a milestone in the whole effort of trying to get some kind of international disclosure about the UFO field. Back in 1977, I was noticing that the Prime Minister of Grenada, Eric Gehry, he had his own little crusade going on to try and get the United Nations to pay attention to him. He was really pleading with the nations of the world to put some kind of a committee together to share and study UFOs. But I also noticed in the press that nobody was really taking him very seriously. So I thought, well, boy, this would be a great opportunity if the United Nations would kind of step in to do this. So I just kind of came up with an idea of trying to meet the man and propose to do a pitch to him about maybe letting me help. And so what I did was, as you and I had discussed the last time I was on, I sent my 1975 UFO documentary record album called UFOs, The Credibility Factor. I sent a couple of copies of it over to the Grenada mission at the United Nations. And I said to his ambassadors, please give my album to your prime minister with my compliments and tell him that I'd love to meet him and discuss some ways that I could help him in his crusade to bring United Nations and UFOs together in some way. And so they got the album down to him, down to Grenada, and I was invited to the United Nations on the night that Eric Gehry was knighted, became Sir Eric Gehry. And it was great. It was like the first time I'd ever, the only time actually, that I'd ever been to the United Nations with some pomp and circumstance ceremony, and I got to see different leaders of the United Nations. They certainly do this on a regular basis, but that was not part of my life at the time. And at some point during the evening, I was introduced to Sir Eric Gehry, and we went into a room alone where we could just talk for a few minutes. And I said, with all due respect, sir, I've been following your crusade in the media to try and get the United Nations to take you seriously about UFOs, but they're not taking you seriously. I can help you do that. Are you interested? And over a handshake, he said, yes, I would be very much interested in having you do this. So that's what we decided to do. And he offered to fund my part of the presentation in case I needed to do any traveling to collect speakers, documents, information. And I discovered at the time very quickly that you cannot just walk into the United Nations and say, I'd like to do a presentation here. They just won't allow you to do that unless you are a member of a delegation or of a country that is interested in putting something together. And I wasn't a member, so they had to make me a delegate. And I actually got a delegate card that indicated that I was a delegate of Grenada. And in fact, for any listeners who are really interested in seeing more about this, if they go to my website, which is simply leespiegel.com, and click on the button that says UN, you will see my official 1978 Grenada delegation card and other interesting pictures from that whole situation. So I started off working on the presentation and preparing all the materials that we were going to need and getting people lined up to become part of this, like astronomer J. Allen Hynek, nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, astronaut Gordon Cooper, astronomer Jacques Vallée, French astronomer Claude Poher, who had just created the official French UFO study group called GEPAN, and GEPAN is still in existence, and other people, Army Major Larry Coyne, who was the commander of a four-man helicopter, who in 1973 was involved with a near collision with a UFO over Ohio. I mean, I got all these people. These were people who had primarily been on my UFO album, so it was easy for me to get them to come together and be with me at the United Nations, because they already knew that I was serious about this, and they all wanted to be at the UN. So once I got them all to agree, then in July of 1978, there was a preliminary closed-door meeting at the United Nations where the Secretary General, Kurt Waldheim, wanted to meet with me and all the people that I was going to be bringing to the UN later that year. He basically wanted to know, well, what are you folks going to do here in November? What's this all about? And again, if you listeners go to leespiegel.com and look at UN, you will see a kind of a famous picture of all of us sitting around the table with the Secretary General at our meeting. And so I spent the rest of that year just compiling information, getting documents and pictures and films and a variety of things to put together for the presentation, which was scheduled near the end of November, when the General Assembly came back together and they scheduled us to be in a very big room called the Special Political Committee Room for all the nations. And Gordon Cooper, who could not be there in November, said to me, you know, look, I want to be part of this, but I have other obligations. What else can I do? How can I help you with what you're doing in New York? And I said, well, you know what, Gordon, here's what you can do. Send me a letter on your official stationery. At the time, he was the vice president for WED Enterprises. WED stands for Walter E. Disney. He worked for a Disney company in California. And I said, send me a letter on your letterhead stationery, basically outlining your personal views on UFOs, where they might come from, why astronauts don't like talking about it publicly, what the United Nations should do about it, etc., etc. And I said, but don't address it to me. Address it to one of the ambassadors or the prime minister of Grenada and their address at the mission of Grenada, but send me the original letter. I will, and before I give the original to Grenada, I will make a gazillion copies of it. so that we can, because part of what we had to do, Martin, was because of the different languages that are used at the UN, all the written materials that I had gathered during the year had to be translated into the various languages, the main three or four languages that are used there. And so I needed time to make sure that I handed in all my materials by a specific date so it could then be worked out so all the different languages could be covered. So it was an interesting task, but I was so highly energized every day of the year to do this. It was great.
Now, Lee, let me just interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
Were you also working a full-time job while you were trying to do this?
I was. Well, since you asked, I was working at the UN to do this during the day, and by night, I was a maitre d' at a restaurant in New York City.
Ah.
It was just something I needed to bring in some extra money to pay the rent and other things because Grenada was only giving me enough money to handle my expenses for what I was doing. They weren't giving me a living expense fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was okay with that. Because I don't think the money that they gave me, I don't know if I even had to declare it because I got it from another
country.
Yeah. So I really can't remember that. And now that I'm telling you this on the air, now the IRS is gonna come get me.
It's already flagged. Yeah.
So, you know, even when I was working on this project, many times I just knew that I was being watched.
Really?
and my phone was being bugged. Yeah.
Wow.
It's like I'd be on the phone talking to anybody, whether it was somebody about this presentation or just friends or family, and there would be pauses in the conversation, and I could hear breathing. And I knew it wasn't my breathing, and it wasn't the breathing of the person I was talking to. And so a couple of times, I just said, you know, screw this. You know what? I'm just going to go for it. And I'd say something like, hey, listen, guys, I know you're listening, and it's okay. You're not going to get anything from me that's going to be worth anything to anybody. So you can either continue listening and recording or just take a break. You know, give it up and, you know, thanks for your interest. I would do that just to acknowledge that I knew what was going on. And this was kind of confirmed to me a couple of months after the whole presentation took place at the end of the year. I got a call from attorney Peter Gersten, who was very important at the time in helping to get original classified documents released from the government by using the Freedom of Information Act, and he was really responsible for getting a lot of these documents out. And one day he called me. His office was up in the Bronx near Yankee Stadium, and he said, listen, I just got a new batch of documents, and one of them is about you. And what you did at the UN, would you like me to send you the document? And I said, no, I'm coming to your office right now.
Yeah.
Don't do anything. I want you to hand it to me. I don't want it to get lost in the mail or anything like that. And up to the Bronx I went. I got this two-page document in which it was written by, in 1978, it had been written by the American ambassador to the United Nations, and it was written to the Secretary of State in Washington. And it basically said that the subject of the document was Grenada UFO Crusade Deja Vu.
Deja Vu?
Yeah, as in, here we go again.
Unreal.
Okay. Wow. And it talked about, you know, here's what Grenada is working on this year at the UN. Here's what they're planning on doing at the end of the year. And it says, you know, undaunted by a lack of response to this UFO item since the 32nd General Assembly, Prime Minister Gary has apparently laid the groundwork for a blitzkrieg sales pitch, which will include a cast of supporters ranging from scientists to astronauts, supplemented by a film production. I mean, I'm actually reading from the document. The document goes on to say, we understand that the person responsible for bringing the group together is producer Lee Spiegel, who's produced an audiovisual presentation that will follow the testimony of the experts. All of the people listed have been officially accredited to the UN General Assembly by Grenada. So it then finishes, the document finishes by saying, here's what they're planning on doing in November. Only a few countries have gone on record with any position on UFOs. Basically, the ambassador is asking his bosses at the State Department, what do you want us to do about this? How do you want us to take any kind of position on this one way or the other? And so I had this document in my hands, which basically said to me, yes, they were paying attention to what I was doing.
Wow. That is amazing.
And again, I'll tell you again, your listeners, if you want to see the document, you can even copy it if you want. It's on the UN page of my website at leespiegel.com. I put all the stuff there so everybody can see exactly what this was all about.
Wow.
And so we did the presentation in November, and my three main speakers were Alan Hynek, Jacques Vallée, Larry Coyne, the Army helicopter pilot, and then following a lunch break press conference for the afternoon session, Stan Friedman came out and did his blitzkrieg thing about how, yes, Earth is being visited by some extraterrestrials. So the upshot was that all we were trying to do was to get enough official interest at the United Nations so that some kind of committee could be formed to investigate and to share UFO information from around the world. Because the one of the problems of doing something like this on this kind of a scale is the language situation. You get different countries with different languages, and they have their own reports. How do you get this stuff to share it and to translate the languages? It's a huge task. Mm. And so we were just trying to get a small committee formed that wouldn't cost the United Nations a lot of money. And I didn't even want to necessarily or need to be part of the committee. It was once the committee was set up, it could just run by itself. And in the end, the then Soviet Union and the United States vetoed the resolution, and that pretty much killed it. You know, because none of the other countries wanted to go along with it. And now here's kind of a, you know, fast forward like 30 years later, I discovered this is just a couple of years ago. I'm working for Huffington Post and writing a lot of stories. There was a point in time when the United Kingdom was releasing to the public, they were doing these occasional releases of all of the British Ministry of Defense UFO files that they had gathered for decades. And in batches, they were releasing these files to the public. And so during one of these release points, my editor came up to me and said, looks like Great Britain is releasing some more UFO files. Do you want to do a piece about it? And I said, sure, because they usually have some good stuff in there. And I could do a couple of interviews and, you know, make it a good story. So I started going through the files that they had released. And I read a story from the BBC. The BBC had gotten the first batch of declassified files, and they released them. So I was looking at the BBC story, and it said, among the more interesting files released today by the BBC are some that show that in 1978, Great Britain tried to stop a UN presentation from happening.
Really?
And I went, I'm sorry, what? let me read that over again and make sure I read that correctly. Yeah, in 1978, the UN was putting a presentation together, or someone was, and that Great Britain didn't think that was a good idea. I went, no, wait a minute, this can't possibly be my presentation. But yes, it was.
Wow.
And so I dug out more of the documents that had just been released a couple of years ago about this, and sure enough, all this stuff about how Grenada is doing this and doing that, and we here in Parliament don't think this is a good idea because it would not leave the United Nations with a good reputation if all of a sudden it was doing something about UFOs. And I thought, well, wait a minute. The United Nations has its own problems anyway. Talking about UFOs isn't just going to add to the problems. I went to my editor and I said, listen, this has now become like a personal issue for me. I would like to write the story, but I would like to write it in the first person. And basically say, I've uncovered these documents that Great Britain tried to stop my presentation, and now I'm just finding out about this like 3 decades later. Are you kidding? This is a story. And one of the things that I did was to call up and interview my friend Nick Pope, who for a few years, I mean, in the 1990s, he ran the UFO office at the Ministry of Defense. He was in charge of looking at all the UFO information that came through the office. So when I got him on the phone, first thing he said to me was, I know why you're calling. Really? Why is that? He said, well, maybe because we just released some information about your presentation in 1978. And I said, yeah, Nick, what can you tell me about this? And he said, well, first of all, I had nothing to do with this. You can't blame me because when you were doing your presentation, I was only a teenager. So I wasn't even working at the Ministry of Defense yet. Mm-hmm. I said, all right, you're off the hook. But why would the great United Kingdom not want this to come out? He said, because they thought that the UN would be embarrassed or would be shamed or that it would just place the whole United Nations organization in disrepute or ill repute. And I said, really? You're kidding me. He said, for better or worse, that's what happened. And he said, I will go on record right now. I will give you an unofficial apology on behalf of my country because since I had nothing to do with it, I can only apologize from me to you. And I said, you know what? I accept your apology. 30 years late, but yeah, okay. So I obviously, Martin, I must have hit a nerve there somewhere in 1978 to get the United States ambassador and the State Department interested in what I was doing, to get Great Britain wanting to shut the whole thing down even before we put the presentation together. It was really interesting to watch this all take place. The upshot was that we did the presentation in November of 1978. A couple of months later, Sir Eric Gehry was overthrown in a political takeover in Grenada. So he was suddenly out of power. And just a few years after that, I'm sitting at home watching the nightly news, and there's this big news item, and this is under President Ronald Reagan. All of a sudden, the news item is the United States has just invaded Grenada.
Right.
Do you remember that?
I sure do.
Man, I was sitting there watching this, and the only thought that came to my mind was, oh, my God, this is my fault. I mean, really?
Did you really think that?
Oh, yeah. Listen, man, I was following the timeline of all this stuff. Here's Eric Gehry in 1977 talking it up, talking UFOs up to the United Nations, trying to stir up the pot. Then in 1978, I make a deal with him to do a big presentation about UFOs with some big-time speakers and personalities, incredible people. And now I'm stirring the pot. And then, as we now know, Great Britain is trying to stop this from happening in 1978, and I didn't know that at the time. And then we do our presentation. It goes over really well, and suddenly both the United States and the Soviet Union, and maybe they vetoed this together. I don't know. But so the resolution died. It's still available if somebody wants to pick it up and run with it again. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden Eric Gehry is overthrown in a political coup, and then We Invade Grenada. So when I put all these little elements of the timeline together, I'm sitting here going, holy crap, it had to be my fault. I mean, I could never prove that, but gee whiz, I mean, really?
Yeah, the timing, something else.
I mean, I didn't want to ever leave my apartment again.
Well, one of the people you mentioned, you know, all those people you mentioned are iconic, but one of them I want to talk about is Gordon Cooper. He was one solid guy, if you ask me, you know, I mean, he was just such a cautious man in everything he did. And anyone that becomes an astronaut, first of all, has to be, you know, grade A. And I always enjoyed hearing the accounts of his two situations, not actually two, but talking about World War II and the fighter jets and seeing basically the Foo Fighters or whatever they called them. And then when he was involved in that UFO landing when he was filming that day.
That's right.
What was he like in person?
He was a great guy. We became friends, and I'll tell you, while I was working on the presentation, as I told you, I was a maitre d' at an Upper East Side New York restaurant. When Gordon was coming into New York to do things, he would call me ahead of time and say, oh, I'm coming in on a Friday. Can you give me a good table at the restaurant? and if there are any young ladies around that you'd like me to meet, I'd certainly enjoy meeting some people and telling them all about my exploits. he was a great guy, and in fact, even before I did the UN presentation, I first met Gordon in 1975, when he was one of the astronauts that I had on my UFO documentary album. And on one of my trips to California to interview him, I interviewed him several times that year in 75. He had me meet him over at Disney, where he worked, because we were going to go and play tennis that day.
Oh.
And I was totally up for that. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to play tennis with Gordon Cooper. This is very cool. We went to a tennis court, and he brought out a couple of cans of Wilson tennis balls. They were unopened, and he cracked open the can, and these balls came out, and every one of the balls had the image of Mickey Mouse on them. I thought, well, that's pretty cool, because you can't really buy, I don't think you could buy these particular tennis balls in a sporting goods store, but wow, we're playing with Mickey Mouse balls. So that's the kind of guy he was. We used to talk about a lot of interesting things. I mean, in 1980, I believe it was, I did an interview with him for the old Omni magazine. Do you recall Omni?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Omni was a magazine that was considered
a great magazine.
It was oriented for consumers. It was a very consumer friendly magazine, and I was one of their featured writers. And I asked them if they'd be interested in having me put together for their interview of the month an interview with Gordon Cooper, and they said, "Yeah, absolutely." So we sat down and we talked about a variety of things from his days as an astronaut, from that and what we did at the United Nations. And, you know, I can't remember specifically how the topic came around to this, but at some point during the interview, we started talking about time travel. I'd always been interested in this. I think most people are. It's one of those things that you grow up and you see movies, you read books, and you hear about time travel. It's something that we're all kind of fascinated with.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking about it, and he just kind of blurted out something to the effect, I'm working with some scientists. I have some scientist friends out here who are in the process now of trying to put a time machine together. I went, really? And this was 1980, okay? So really, a time machine? And how exactly would this work? He said, well, they're working on a theory of something called orthogonal rotation. And for some reason, Martin, I never forgot that phrase, and I'm still not sure what it means, but this is what he said, and all of this went into the final interview that I did with him. He said, yeah, they're working on something called orthogonal rotation, where the vehicle or the chair or the whatever it is that you'd be sitting in, it rotates in such a way at such a frequency that they believe that it can break the bounds of time and traveling. And I said, well, okay, how close are they to finishing such a device? He said, well, they're working on it. They think it's going to happen, and they'll have it ready for some kind of testing soon. I said, that's unbelievable. And I said, so tell me more about this. Do they think they'll be able to send something or someone either into the future or into the past? He said, well, they think that the only way that they can get this to work is to go into the past. And I said, well, okay. He said they haven't quite figured out the calculations or the science or the technology to go in both directions. And I said, all right. Now, next question, Gordon. Who would be foolish enough to sit in something that could only be basically a one-way trip? Mm. And he said, you're looking at him.
Really?
Yeah, and at that moment, I realized, well, you know what? probably the bravest individuals on the planet are test pilots. Mm-hmm. Because they have to be. They have to be afraid of nothing in order to do what they do. I mean, all that whole right stuff that we've heard about and we saw in the book and in the movie with the early astronauts, that they took so many chances, you know, to test all of these new vehicles, including the new stealth vehicles that we have. People of the right stuff, they basically are afraid of nothing. And he was one. He was, you know, you have to have that kind of attitude. And he was one of those individuals. And I said, really, you would take and you would give up everything, your life here, your family, to go someplace and never be heard or seen from again? He said, well, yeah, because it's all part of, you know, science and advancement. I said, yeah, but you're talking about knowing that you're not going to come back. It's like, you know, people nowadays, they talk about preparing for the first trip to Mars and to become mm-hmm. caught. And they're saying that they're actually taking, I guess, some kind of pre-applications for people who want to go to Mars, but knowing that there's no return trip.
Right. I think there was like, I want to say hundreds of thousands of people signed up for that.
I know. Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, I don't personally understand the attitude, but I guess that there is a sense that, you know, it's not just a matter of doing something for science. I think there are people who are so unhappy with the way things are going on this planet that they would welcome a move to go somewhere else.
And, that's crossed my mind too. That would, you know, if that's part of the reason. Yeah.
So Gordon Cooper was like one of those guys, and I'm assuming that maybe all test pilots would have taken that kind of a trip. And mm-hmm. so here we are. That was 1980. Now we're in 2014. I'm going to assume, but I don't know for sure, so I can't prove it. I'm going to assume that a time machine has been built and has been experimented with, and then some kind of results. But again, I don't know. No documents have been released about this thing. I mean, certainly it would be a top secret kind of project. But wow, how fascinating is that?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I used to say, kind of as a joke, that they'll never invent a time machine, because otherwise we'd see people from, you know, from the future. But who knows? You know, I mean, one of the theories of what UFOs or some UFOs could be,
Yeah, that they could be us or humans from the future coming back in time with some kind of a Star Trek non-intervention policy. It's like you can go back in time, you can observe things, but do not do anything to change history.
Do not step on the butterfly.
Yeah. So it's all really fascinating stuff. It'd be great. It's always great material for new movies and new books, and we all eat this stuff up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about a recent interview you had.
Yes.
Rolling Stones, and yes. I want to say her name is Elephant.
Elephant.
Yes. So I watched the interview, and where can someone find that? It's on YouTube, I'm sure.
Actually, if you want to just do like a. It's on YouTube, but I think that the easiest thing to do, if anybody wants to look at it, just do a Google search and just simply type in Elephant Sex. And let me spell her name for you and everybody. It's Elephant. One more time. Elephant. Elephant. She is a Swedish rock star who has a variety of provocative videos out there and several albums, and she's on a tour right now to promote these things. And a couple of months ago, Rolling Stone magazine brought her into New York to bring her to their UFO. Their UFO. you see what's on my brain?
Yeah.
They brought her to New York to the Rolling Stone studios to have her interview someone about something she's interested in. And when they asked her, what do you want to talk about? She said, I want to talk to someone about UFOs. So it finally came to me, and they invited me to come up to the studios and be interviewed by Elephant. And I was happy to do it because I looked her up on the internet and I checked her out, and she's totally, totally cute.
Oh, yes.
And so I thought, well, how bad can this be? And so I went there, and we sat and we talked for an hour. That's how long the interview lasted, and they condensed it down to about a 3-minute version, which they released just a few days ago with a little story that goes with it. And basically, Elephant has been interested in UFOs, she says, like forever. They quoted her as saying, I look for a UFO every moment I get. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about a variety of things, but she was kind of interested in focusing on things like, I mean, when she asked me if I had ever had my own personal close encounter with something that I might consider as a spaceship, and when I honestly said yes, her one word response was cool.
Don't let's not get into details.
Yeah, I mean, I was fully ready to tell her about my story that I think I told you the last time.
Yes. Yeah.
But she went from cool to, I think the next thing she said was, I really would like to become the mother of an alien hybrid baby.
And didn't you say something like, get in line?
Yeah, it's exactly what I said. I said, well, I started laughing, and I said, you're going to have to get in line. And then she would ask me, she'd say, cold-blooded or hot-blooded? And I went, well, what do you mean? Do you think they're cold-blooded aliens or hot-blooded aliens? And I said, Elephant, I can't possibly answer that, because how would I know? I have no insider knowledge on this. I only really believe that we are being visited by someone. And she immediately went cool and raised both of her arms up over her head.
You know, that is an interesting question. I would have never thought to even think of that.
Yeah, I mean, she wanted to go in the direction of do aliens have love in their lives? And I said, well, it would be a sad thing if they didn't. But again, I don't know. All that I know is what scientists tell me. Seth Shostak, the senior astronomer at the SETI Institute in California, and all that they do, what they do, is they're constantly searching the heavens for any signs of intelligent life. And Seth told me that the current thinking is that in our galaxy, our little ordinary Milky Way galaxy, that there might be tens of thousands of habitable planets, and that there are very likely many planets that have intelligent civilizations on them, and we're only talking about this little galaxy that we live in, because now we know that there are billions and billions of galaxies out there. So when people say to me, well, you know, what proof of there is there of life in the universe, I show them a picture of the Hubble telescope that was released earlier this year, that in one little picture shows 10,000 galaxies. I show this picture to people and I say, to me, that's proof. Look at that picture, because each galaxy has billions of stars. Most of those stars have planets around them. So statistically, you can't fight the odds. There's life out there, and that's my proof. And I'm comfortable with that as proof to myself. Other people will say, well, no, that's not proof enough. Well, I don't care. I've said to people, Martin, if you get 10 people, line them up, sit them down, and start from one end of the line to the other, and ask them all, what would it take for you to believe that Earth is being visited by someone? You'll get 10 different answers.
Right.
That's just the way human nature is. And so I am comfortable believing what I believe, and I don't feel like I have to defend myself, and I often have to. I have lots of people who write comments in my stories or send me emails and tell me that I'm full of crap, that I can't possibly know what I'm saying, and I say, I'm not an expert. I just present people, and I'm very fortunate to be able to pick up a phone and call leading scientists and military people and law enforcement people and ask them what they think of this stuff. You're not just getting my opinions. You're getting my beliefs based on the conversations I have with people who we should be listening to. When Elephant asked me or told me that she wanted to become the mother of an alien baby, my response to her, in addition to when I said you have to get in line, I also said that, and they did not include this in the 3-minute version of the video. I said to her, I know people who you could talk to, who could perhaps put you in touch with that situation. But I guess the Rolling Stone editors didn't think that was credible enough for me to say something like that. But it's true. I do know people who claim that they are the fathers and daughters and wives and sons of aliens. And I don't know how accurate it is, but if she wants to talk to these people, I can give her some phone numbers.
Was there any other part of the conversation that they took away that you thought was pretty interesting?
For example, I started to mention that after I had done the album in 1975, and that I believed that we were being visited, I tried to get her to ask me about the United Nations presentation that you and I just talked about, because that is still a very important thing that I did. But no, she didn't really, I mean, we had the time, we could have talked about it, but she wanted to go in some other directions. And in fact, at the end of the interview, and when you see it, I start asking her some questions, and I asked her what pieces of her music would she like to see be transmitted into outer space. And her response to that was, that's a very good question. Well, you know, and what people don't know is that during the interview, while the cameras were still rolling, they stopped the actual interview for a moment, and the producer said to me, why don't you ask Elephant which of her music she'd like to see go into outer space? So I didn't come up with that myself. They asked me to ask her that. So of course, so of course, she thought that that was a very good question. Well, duh. You know.
And did she have an answer? That's
she did. She said something like, "I would like my new EP, my extra extended new video or song to or album to be put out there." And then I said something like, "Well, do you think that the extraterrestrials would get it, would understand it as music, as a form of our culture?" And she said, "Yes, absolutely." And it was at that point that the interview came to an end on the screen. Even though they didn't let you see where she says, "I've been sitting here talking with the professor."
Well, you know how those producers are. They're always thinking, you know, where they can get their plugs in.
I know. And you know, it wasn't until I got back to Huffington Post that day after doing the interview that I realized that throughout the entire hour that I was there with her, she never once actually mentioned my name. Not what? Not in the introduction. Her introduction was something like, "I'm here doing a special elephant interview, and now let's get into it." And suddenly there I was sitting on the other side of the table, and the only way that readers or viewers would know that who I am was they put, you know, Lee Spiegel, Huffington Post, underneath me on the screen. Because when I got back to Huffington Post, I sent an email to the producer over there, and I said, "Listen, do me a favor, in your post-production and editing, please identify me on screen because Elephant never mentions my name."
That is something else. Yeah. Yeah, Lee, let's get into some of your stories recently, because I just saw the one that you wrote the other day and in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. I kind of stumbled onto this over the last a few weeks ago. I was up in New Hampshire spending time with my family, and my 15-year-old nephew, Benjamin, came up to me and just very casually, matter-of-factly said, "Hey, Uncle Lee, I think I saw a UFO here in October, and I just thought I would tell you about it." And I said, well, why did you not tell me about this before?" "Well, I didn't know if you'd believe it. And I didn't tell my parents because I didn't know if they would care. But you're here, so I'm just telling you about it." And I said, "Well, what did it look like?" And he said, "Well, I took a picture of it. Would you like to see the picture?" And he went, "Oh, well, yes. Now we're talking. Of course I'd like to see the picture." And he showed me the picture, and it's right at the top of my story on Huffington Post. It's definitely a V-shape or boomerang-shaped object in the night sky. It's very well lit, and you can see the actual shape of it. And then when we zoomed in on it, you could almost see three separate areas on it that are more well-defined or more brightly lit than and lit enough where the whole object is lit up. So if it wasn't my nephew, I wouldn't know how reliable he was. But because we're related, and you know, he wouldn't try and pull a fast one on me. I thought this was really interesting, and a neighborhood friend was with him, and I talked to both of them, and I ended up going outside with Ben, and I said, "Well, show me where you saw it in the sky. Let me ask you a few questions about it." So I did a little interview with him about it, and then I said, "Let's go sit at the computer. Let's see if anybody else in town may have seen the same thing, and maybe it was reported." So he punched in, we did a Google search, and all that he wrote was Concord, New Hampshire, UFO. And we didn't even put any date on it. He saw it on October 5th, but all we did was Concord, New Hampshire, UFO. And we found a couple of articles that talked about how other people, a family in Nashua, 30 miles south of Concord, on the same night, about an hour later after Ben's sighting, they saw this thing that came close to them above the trees, and they were driving on a highway about 50 miles an hour, and they said this thing was going maybe only 30 or 40 miles an hour, and it was really, really close, and they got a very good look at it, and it was also boomerang-shaped or V-shaped. And when they got home, The father, Jim Bo, quickly drew, made an illustration of what they had just seen on the way home. And then he took that illustration to his son, John, who created a computer rendition of it based on the illustration. And in my story, I have both the original drawing and the computer rendition. It's an amazing looking thing, whatever it was. And I took all this information, came back to New York, and went to my editor, and I said, I think this is a good story, despite the fact that my nephew is one of the prime witnesses. We shouldn't hold that against me, and I'd like to write the story. And he said, do it. And so it's up there on the site right now for all to see. Interesting sighting. And what I like a lot about it is that in so many UFO encounters, people don't have or don't have the time to take a picture. Ben is the only person who photographed this thing.
Really?
And when it comes to UFOs, the credibility of an image is really important to the story, and so that's why we went with it, because it's a good, credible story. Now, what the object was, we don't know. I interviewed a guy named Mark Podell. He's with the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. He's a New Hampshire field investigator for MUFON. And his analysis, he's come back with thinking that he told me he studied aircraft and propulsion systems for 25 years. He thinks that what these folks all saw is a man-made, probably stealth aircraft that has abilities that most people aren't aware of. And I agree with him. That's most likely what it is, because there's so much of that now. We know that stealth aircraft have these shapes. We know that they're often tested. We know that people see them.
Yeah, but what about the 30 or 40 miles an hour? Didn't you say that's what they were assuming it was?
Yeah. Again, When this guy Mark said to me that it may have abilities that most people aren't aware of, well, maybe that's one of the things. Mm-hmm. I think the Marines fly, and I forget what the designation number is, but there are some jets that actually can rise off the ground,
right,
and can float there for a second and then take off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a standing position, and they've been doing that for years. So I'm not surprised that all the money that our tax dollars pay for, the black ops projects, has come up with something that can do what people claim to see in the sky. I don't have a problem with that, and it's not necessarily extraterrestrial. When I asked my nephew Ben, I said, you know, what do you think it was? Do you want to speculate what you think it was? And he could have easily said, well, yeah, I think it was an alien from outer space, but he didn't say that. All he said was, Uncle Lee, it was a UFO. It was an unidentified flying object. I didn't know what to think. It was just there. I had my iPod. I took a picture. That's all. And he did say that when he and his friend were looking at it, that this thing was slowly zigzagging back and forth in the sky from right to left, and it would rise up, and it would do a little circle, and then it would zigzag again, and then it eventually disappeared behind some trees. Well, that's a good sighting. No matter what it is, it's something unusual. And it made for a good story, and I was happy that Ben could be part of the story.
Excellent. So we're out of time, basically, Lee. But before I go, Alejandro wanted me to give you a hard time. Do you guys have relationship issues, UFO relationship issues?
We're like an old married couple. You know, we don't agree on anything. We give the impression that we hate each other. We're constantly saying bad things about each other in public, when in fact we cannot love each other or admire or respect each other more. I was the guy who helped him become one of the Huffington Post's best bloggers about UFOs. We talk several times a week. We just really admire the hell out of each other, and I'm happy to call my friend.
Well, that's great. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Martin. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, that's it for the show today. You can listen to other free podcasts on our website, which is podcastufo.com. You can also check out the links and the stories in our show notes, as well as joining in the conversation in our forums. And I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Alejandro Rojas for the news, and our guest, of course, Lee Spiegel, Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for the music, Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page, and remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. We have Linda Moulton Howe coming up next week, and remember, you can subscribe to hear all the second half hour shows for only 99 cents a month. And we'll be right back here live next week on the Dark Matter Radio Network, and every Wednesday at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Martin Willis reminding you to keep your eyes to the sky, and we'll see you.